everyone. Welcome to Season 11, Episode 3. This is your weekly edition of Community Strategy and Technology. We like to call it Commander Cast. Brought to you on mtgcast.com, quietspeculation.com, and our home site, commandercast.com. Check us out every day of the week. Articles, tips, strategies, and some general nerd rage. Joining with me today, as always, is my co-host, Calvin, a.k.a. Captain Red Zone. How are you doing today, sir?
I am pleasantly plumped and ready to go into some fattening concepts involving, like, multiple tokens and creatures.
Oh, that is brilliant. That's because we are doing our third part in a row for the Return of Ravnica review, which is our Selesnya review. Then we'll go ahead and take a break for about a week before we have another staff host on to talk about the next guild. But like we said, Selesnya this week, and to talk about Selesnya with us, we've brought on Noel. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing all right. Excited to be back.
Excited to be back and excited to have a new position from what we discussed in the offseason. You want to tell people about that?
Sure. I am now the editor of Commander Cast. To take some of the burden off of William, I'm actually handling the written content and working as the written content coordinator and making sure that the writers are doing their job and that I'm doing my job. It basically is an excuse that I only have to write every other week. Not really, but it's a really kind of an interesting job. I get to see all the articles a couple days before they come out and make sure that not all of us write about the same thing.
And because you're only writing every other week, that means that your other weekly time slot is filled with what?
Absolutely. I'm glad I got to plug this. Me and Eric Bonvie, formerly of Vexing Devil's Advocate and now of Up Your Deck, are making our little podcast called Rivals Duel. We pick a topic every week. Our first one will have dropped, I guess, 2 weeks ago once this comes out, as far as where we're looking at where we pick a topic every week and we argue about what side of it is worth. We pick something we disagree on and debate it. Just kind of a friendly debate. We're calling ourselves a Commander Cast Sexier Younger Sister.
I don't know about that. I mean, maybe like a really hot stepsister, but...
All right, and now we've made it weird.
No more so weird than I make it on a weekly basis.
Fair enough. Yeah, so by all means, check us out. We are working to get on MTGCast as of this recording and get on MTGCast and all the other places CommanderCast is hosted, so hopefully you'll be seeing us more than that. But if nothing else, come over to CommanderCast.com, check out our great written content, and look for me and Eric on Rivals Duel every other Thursday.
Now, Noel, because you are a returning champion, we've already asked you about your favorite legendary, so we're going to take it up to level 2 now. You're going to get to tell us who your favorite Planeswalker is and why. And we're not just talking about card, although the card certainly will be a big part of it, but also, you know, just as a character.
Ooh, this is tough. They surprised me with this.
On the spot.
For an all-around kind of utility and nostalgia factor, I have to say Venser. I always liked Venser in the old Time Spiral Black novels, which dates how long I've been playing this game, but I've always liked him as a character. I was sad to see him. He's the one character that Wizards has given an on-screen death to of the modern Planeswalker since they started being their own cards, so I'm sad to see we'll never see another Venser card, but for now, that's probably been my favorite character to see so far as Walkers go.
Just because Venser has been killed does not mean he will not be back. Remember, the plane he died on is New Phyrexia.
Even then, Wizards have said repeatedly that they like their deaths to be actually dead for reals. And to
like comic books where the only people who stay dead are Jason Todd and Uncle Ben.
Yeah, you pay attention to comic books like, yeah, that's never gonna happen. Like, they said Bucky Barnes was never gonna be brought back ever, and then he turned out to be the Winter Soldier. That's never gonna happen. Like, they killed off Spider-Man. They'll be back at some point.
So how did Venser, like, what did he do again? Did he rip out his heart or his spark or something like that?
Venser was already dying from heart failure or some other sort of disease.
Gotcha.
So he
drug use!
Ah.
Yeah.
He's a druggie in the new... Okay, this is one of those reasons why I despise the new books, is because they take Venser from a cool, like, teleporting, I don't know exactly what I'm doing, but I'm overpowerful planeswalker, to I'm a druggie who literally goes from planes to planes, stealing things so I can put them into my body.
That I did not know.
That's right.
But, yeah, he teleported his heart into Karn, and apparently the spark is in the heart, so that's what purified Karn.
That just seems weird.
It does seem a little odd, but suffice it to say, we will not be seeing Zombie Venser anytime soon. Because Wizard still has, like, a plethora of whole pantheon of characters that they want to tell stories about.
You do realize some Vorthos is going to just rage us in the comments for getting half of this wrong, right?
Oh, if they do, yeah. I'll be happy that we get comments, period.
But by all means, hit us up in the comments and tell us the actual story of Glissa and Venser and all these characters we've gotten stuff wrong about.
Hey, fun fact, Bolas came back from death-ish kind of state because Venser. Apparently he hijacked some of his essence or whatever. He did some sort of crazy time thing where he anchored a part of his essence onto Venser's. And then during Time Spiral, he was able to come back through like this gap thing.
It's been so long since I've read the books. I remember Venser being a cool character, then getting turned into a wuss in the Winter Mute novel, still being a good card. The other reason I like him is that I love the blink effects and the stuff on the card Venser, both the legendary creature and the planeswalker, so that's another reason for my nerd crush on Venser.
Yeah, you can use Venser to blink Venser.
Done that before.
Yeah, Venser actually does play really well with Lavinia, I have found. Okay, so Calvin, we've got a couple of announcements besides a new editor.
Let's see, announcements that we currently have. We have the new editor.
Yep.
And we also have Gifts Given 2013 coming.
Yep. Yeah, we're recording this the day after we recorded episode 2, so there really hasn't been any progress between then and now. Yeah, pretty much.
Gifts Given 2013 will be coming soon. We're working on it. We're getting everything situated and organized. And by the time this is being recorded after episode 2. So let's see here. By the time you hear
it'll come out
this,
September
it'll be
30th.
Basically the end of September.
Yep. Yeah. It literally will be the end of September.
And hopefully, by the time you hear episode 3, we'll have everything kind of like hammered in. Mm. And in that case, like if everything is, you'll have like a website to go to and all the information, the links and stuff like that. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen, because we will be getting there and we will do what we can to give this money to these children.
So, outside of Gifts Given and the announcement for the new editor, Noah, you want to go ahead and get our submissions request out there?
Oh, sure. We are thinking about picking up some more writers. We've had a couple people send us stuff already. If you've got our stuff and you haven't heard back from us yet, that's on me. It's because I've been really bad at actually reading submitted content. But our goal is actually the unofficial official goal, I guess, now is to have 2 writers for every day so that either if you want to write every other week, you can, or heaven forbid, we have more than 1 article a day on the site, which means right now there's currently 4 of us who produce written content. We'd love to see 4 more. That way, Commander Cast, the actual podcast, can have Monday, and then we can save Monday for people who want to do one-shot guest stuff. But if there's any of you who feel like you have something you want to say or have an opinion about it, or maybe you just want to be just a counterpoint to one of our other things, we'd love to have you. So send something to us. CommanderCast@gmail.com is the email to submit stuff like that. It gets forwarded to me, and then William and I make a decision. We try to get back to you as quick as we can. So by all means, if you're interested in writing for us, we are constantly looking for new writers. Please feel free to send stuff to us. We've been the stepping stone for a lot of authors who are now doing this as a profession, and we're happy to continue that role. So if you previous experience writing for a magic website is not required.
Absolutely. And in fact, I actually like being able to help people kind of break into this scene. You know, a lot of our people... No, did you ever write a magic article before you started writing your stuff?
No, you guys are the first people I ever wrote for.
Exactly. That, like you said, that's a tradition I like keeping, is that we're kind of the training grounds for new writers to kind of see if this is a thing they actually want to do. Because we're a community website, we don't pay people, we just kind of ask you to turn in your stuff on time. Please use proper grammar and spelling, you know, pretty much have a high school coherency when writing your things, and to absolutely know what you're talking about. You know, don't say X goes with X when it clearly does not go with X.
Then you get nasty grams from me saying, that combo does not work how you think it does. Please revise.
Why are you playing Death Rush Shaman and Scavengers within a Turmogoyf deck? Silly player, that's a non-bow. Not just, you know, with deck stuff, because we obviously have a lot of deck techs writing within our own staff, but we're definitely looking for people who want to kind of help branch out stuff. You know, I'm definitely not opposed to receiving fictional pieces if they can find a way to really make it a Commander favorite theme. Now I was writing the flavor article, a column for Commander Cast when Annie was still doing this. Some of my more popular pieces actually were the full-blown narratives. You know, maybe I would be trying to describe a deck, or I would actually be writing an actual fictional piece. But those always seem to do well, and that's not something I would be opposed to if Noah and I could find something that we actually agreed was worth putting on the site. Now, we'd also be looking for people who just want to cover events. Maybe you just want to be that guy who goes from event to event, records a camera. We'll go ahead and host it on our YouTube channel, and we can embed it onto our site here. Or if you want to do what Chris B. used to do, and you know, he looked at altars and just art for commander cards or what have you. You know, just kind of diversifying the selection that we could bring to
Commander Cast.
Sure. One thing we have right now is our three pillars of strategy, community, and technology. We have nobody who writes straight strategy articles. We have a lot of community articles, like in some of Unexpected Results and Social Contract from Below, and we have a lot of tech articles in Up Your Deck and Staple Remover. If there was somebody who just wanted to write about strategy, I got a really good submission about threat assessment in Commander that person will probably be getting a call, assuming William likes him as much as I did. As far as just finding a straight strategy writer, it was something that we don't have right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that wraps up our announcements. We're going to go ahead and go straight into our community segment.
We're actually talking about a lot of us get a chance to travel to playgroups outside of our own little commander group. And I really feel like your commander decks a lot of times take on the flavor of whatever your local group is, whether that's a social contract thing where we just all agree we don't play, quote-unquote, this way, or stuff like that, house rules that come up, house cards that are banned, stuff like that. And so for a community segment, we're going to talk about when you're traveling to a group outside your normal play group, whether that's going to a Grand Prix to play pods, or you've gone to a new store or something like that, what kind of deck should you bring for your first foray into a different commander group?
Okay, beautiful children, it's that time again. Time for the Commander Cast Home version. This week's question, what kind of decks do you like to bring to a Grand Prix? What do you like to play against? Our boy Eduardo P. says, a normal deck, Tristani, a grindy control deck, Mishra, and a combo wound deck just in case, Animar. Always be prepared. Mikey D says, if I ever go, I take some serious Damia, and take fun, Feldegriff, and a wild card, Bruna. Okay, on the Facebook end, our boy Johnny Butt, my favorite guy, and your favorite guy, I would sport my three favorite decks at the moment. My version on the Dreamcrusher Child of Alara common deck, my all-vert creature Animar deck, and my group hug Riku deck. Though I would bring my case that holds 12 decks, so I have options. Danny W. says, I take my theme decks for a bit of fun. Jasmine Boreal, Vanilla Ice Cream, and Lorthos Sea Life are always great choices. Carl R., Australia's GP scene, recently has been chucking down some great anti-douche rules about early game kills and combos. Personally, I'll be taking my no combo, no extra turn Riku, Stormseeker, Value, Engine. Gilly G. says, I'm more of a casual guy, so no events for me. But if I did go, I would take my Damia Good Stuff Nobody Gets to Have Fun deck to punish all the tryhards for their competitiveness. I will say, you may as well just go to a GP if it's around you anyway. You don't even have to enter, but you're going to find a ton of people, and you'll probably play, like, you know, 405 EDH matches or something like that. It's a decent time, if you have some friends. I'm going to assume you got some friends there, Gilly G. All right, and let's finish it off with our boy Conrad. I haven't been to one yet, but if I did, I would assume there are some super competitive ones out there, so I'd bring all of mine. And there you go, kids. We post a question every week on the Facebook, on the Twitter. Answer it, be awesome, you be on it. Later.
This is something that I actually got the chance to experience earlier this year, I think it was. I don't get to go to stuff like GPs or huge events all that often because I'm a broke-ass bachelor in his own apartment. Go figure. Point being, since one time I did get to go to the GP, for the most part, it was decent. You know, I met a couple of people through our connections. You know, I got to meet Chewy from the Manipole. He was really cool. Didn't actually get to play with him, though. You know, I got to meet Norbert again. We had Norbert the first time I had a show, and he records the Jinx Isles podcast, and has actually been mentioned as being pretty relevant in the community from time to time, with as often as he's tweeting, the old bird lover him. I'm really not surprised. And for the most part, we had fun commander games. But then we had this one guy show up, and it was just one of those decks that really pissed me off because it was one of those super hyper-tuned, extremely blinged-out, Jowl-the-One-Eyed mono-black decks. And it's doing all the things that mono-black decks do. You know, it's making an obscene amount of mana, it's just recurring everything, it's killing all the stuff. I believe I posted a picture of it on Twitter saying, this was the guy I was getting ready to dropkick. Not the guy playing 5 Enchantment Corona, which I thought was pretty novel, or the person playing Niv-Mizzet Firemind, but just this guy.
So a couple ground rules for whenever you're going to an event, these are real regardless of whether you know anything about the playgroup or not. The first thing I'd say is make sure you're following the commander ban list. I know the store I play at, we have one guy who owns one Mox between the 25 of us who frequent the store. He's allowed to play with his Mox jet because it's the only format he gets to. And it's fine by us. As long as he doesn't do anything stupidly degenerate with it, he can use it. But if he's going somewhere or we're going someplace where we think we're going to be playing commander with strangers, the first thing you should do is go ahead and play by the commander ban list.
Yep, there cannot be any Primeval Titans left over in that deck, sir. Although I am expecting a lot more Staff of Dominations.
I don't, because I think the Social Contract beat that card into oblivion. Like, I feel like you're either playing it for the goofy little bit of value it can add. It's a good card, but it's not, you're no longer pairing it up with Raphelos and having those two hold hands and skip together through the moonlight. Like, very rarely do you see people make infinite mana or do that, which actually feeds into my next kind of unspoken rule about this, is that don't bring a deck that inherently violates the social contract. It sounds like, William, you hit one in the, I'm going to make infinite mana and cast Exsanguinate for 40 billion. Or, you know, if you have your turn 3 combo deck, or your Sharam Prison Lock, or your I'm going to kill you all on turn 3 with plants I've made from Root Awakening. Yeah. Those are the kind of decks that you leave at home when you're getting ready to jump in.
No, it wasn't even that per se. It was just the super aggression of I'm going to be doing a bajillion of these things that really push my board state beyond what you can deal with, but at the same time, I'm not going to win this turn.
Mm-hmm.
This is just my personal quirk that absolutely has no bearing on this whatsoever, but for some reason, really high-priced decks piss me off. There's a guy around my store that I call Money Bags whenever I'm talking about him with friends or whatever, and it's because he just has all these, I don't know where he gets the money for this, but he somehow foils out all of his decks almost as soon as he makes them. For some reason, that just really makes me mad. You know, I built this Aurelia, the War Leader deck, soon after she came out. I went to the store to try it out, and I saw that he had an Aurelia deck too, but it was pretty much all foil. Now, granted, he had just made some modifications from a Gisela deck he was playing earlier, but still, just seeing the instant bling pisses me off for some reason. Although,
just because you're a hater, sir.
Maybe. Though to be fair, he was playing a certain uncard that made all his premium spells cheaper to cast.
This goes back to point number one. Don't play cards on the EDH ban list.
Well, no. He did ask us if that was okay. He said, hey, here's this card that I play with from the deck. Is that okay? And we were all fine with it. I'm perfectly fine with people playing stuff if they ask beforehand, which he did. It's just seeing what the deck did before, seeing how the deck was built after, that kind of got me angry. Which, actually, let's go ahead and go... Calvin, did you have something to add?
Because the main things I would add are already kind of tossed in there. If you're going to be doing this, the main thing you're going to want to do is just make sure you have all of your stuff together. Make sure that your deck falls into the legalities of what the banned and restricted list is, because that's kind of what everyone would be expecting to see. But you know, nothing major that I can't really already say that hasn't already been said just yet.
All right, because this actually leads into something that I actually want to go ahead and ask you guys is it a good idea to bring decks that have a lot of money invested into them? Like, I love bringing Kalia and playing it with people I've never played against before, even though she's a bit of a ruthless machine at times. But at the same time, I'm also worried about the deck just getting stolen or me forgetting it somewhere and just losing all those cards I spent forever collecting. Because these are events where people will reach under your chair and steal your bag if you're not careful.
Like, if you reach out and touch my deck, there will be problems. Unless, of course, I'm presenting it to you to shuffle.
You know, I kind of follow me. That's the risk you take if you bring it. You know, I think about, you know, I don't bring my cube to GPs anymore just because I have enough invested in that I would hate to see it walk away. For me, I look at my commander decks, and price is definitely a factor. I don't have any commander decks that are, you know, all foil, super shiny, super awesome, chocolate-coated, whatever. I've got some that I go, all right, I don't need to, I don't have any that are expensive enough to where I can say I feel uncomfortable having this in my bag. If I did, I probably wouldn't bring it.
Okay, and that's definitely fair. So, no, you got another point to bring up?
Yeah, the other one I always say is to bring something that's kind of middle of the road as far as power. You know, all of us have our decks. I call them our dirty little secrets, those of us who have a lot of decks. You have the one that you go, well, it's almost socially contract okay, it just plays Awakening and Squirrel Nest. Or, no, it doesn't always lock out the whole table by turn 5, sometimes it takes turn 7 or 8. You've got the decks that you have with your friends, you bring them out once every 4 months to get your fix when you want to win, and those are great for that purpose. But if you're going into a new place, or going into to play casual games at a GP or something like that, those aren't the kind of decks you bring. Now, if this is Commander Challenge events where there's some high prize at the end, the social contract goes out the window, and despite the fact that I hate these events, if you're going to play them, I'm not going to be upset if you bring a very good deck and try to win.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in the spirit of sportsmanship, you know, don't do stuff like collude or try and work out a deal with a buddy saying, okay, we're both going to go ahead and tag team this event, because that's definitely not a thing to do, despite, you know, just niceties going out the window. But yeah, anytime a prize is involved, almost anything goes in my eyes.
Yeah, and so this is not aimed at you. If you're going to go play pickup Commander games at the back of the hall or whatever at a GP, or maybe you've moved or are going to a new store to meet new people, don't bring the overpower thing, but also don't bring your dorky, I call them EDH theme decks. Like, don't bring your, this deck never actually wins, I just like to make the board stay complicated, Corona. Or leave Judge Breaker at home.
Oh, yeah.
This deck has nothing but ponies.
No, stuff like nothing but ponies.
I call it Deaf Under Hoof.
That sounds okay-ish. I think what Noel's trying to get at is, like, ignoring the wary chaos decks. The stuff that just really pisses people off, especially when you do something
Mr.
like,
I don't like what's going on here.
Yeah, stuff like you fill the board and then you thieves auction.
Yeah, your first time, think of it like the first time you're meeting new people in any other situation. Do you really want to be that guy? Do you want to be the guy who brings Judge Breaker? Like, I have two different Judge Breaker Commander decks, and I bring them out with my other judge friends or other friends who want to learn rules or don't mind me playing it once every 4 months so I can get my fix. I don't bring it out with new people. I've terrified new players with it. Just bring your kind of middle of the road deck. It can be theme-ish. Like, I have a Simic deck that's all creatures that I could play just fine in a new group. I'm working on, for as a joke with a couple other writers, I'm working on a House Stark deck based on Game of Thrones. And like, that's fine to bring. You can be that guy. I don't mind that so much. Just don't be the person who either brings the super-powered nuclear missile machine gun, and don't bring the guy who brings a stick to a gunfight.
Now, on a further note, what about the collected decks themselves? Like, I can't imagine that there's anything stipulating saying you can't all, like, if I just chose to bring five commander decks, as I usually do, they can't all be combo decks, or they can't all be aggression decks. But I think there's some sage advice to say, go ahead and divvy up the decks that you want to play with. You know, you might want to bring one or two aggro decks, a combo deck, and a control deck, because then you can go ahead and bring some variance to the games that you get to play over the weekend, or you can go ahead and switch up the decks depending on what the group you're playing with prefers most.
Sure, bring a variety. The thick clue I always give is bring something that your opponents would want to go home and tell their friends about playing against. Like, if I have to go, oh yeah, he tutored for Aura Thief, tutored for Enchanted Evening, killed all of our stuff and stole every permanent, then killed us all with our own stuff. That's not a good story. If it's this game took 4 hours because it was awesome. Those are the kind of stories I always look at that as, is this a deck I really want to play against? I have a couple decks that get pretty griefy. The Oros Lots of Wrath decks I've talked about in my articles before, those are fine too. Those are, you know, probably not the deck I should bring with to a new group of players.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You want to bring it to the group. You want to show these new players who's boss.
Your tears sustain me.
Okay,
you don't want them sitting around looking at you like you're a little chick, are you? Because, like, I'm not going to say the other word because, you know, I'm trying to be respectful. And by chick, I mean, like, baby chicken.
This isn't prison rules. It's not, I have to make a mark and shank the first guy who looks at me funny so that they know I'm not. But
yeah, okay, so let's talk about that time frame, because people want to get in as many games as they can, and they want to be able to get in fun games. You don't want the game to end too quickly, but you don't want the game to take forever. So, if you know what kind of game your decks tend to play in, say, consistent settings, what's a good time frame to aim for?
I would say 60 to 90 minutes. More if you're looking at five or six people. But really, for an event like a GP where you may not have a lot of time, or it's late and everybody wants to get one game in before we go to bed, you know, 60 to 90 minutes is what I would say is a reasonable amount of time. If you have a deck that regularly goes over 3 hours, it's probably not the right one to bring.
So,
unless, of course, you just really hate the people you're playing with.
No, because you got day two of a GP to play the next day. You don't want to be up that late either.
if you didn't make it in, and this is the guy that, like, well, he's the reason you didn't make it in because he beat you the last round, and suddenly he wants to talk about playing EDH with you, yeah, you break out that 3-hour deck.
I guess. I don't know what to say about that one. If you're on day two of a GP, you probably should not be staying up playing Commander.
Unless you happen to be on vacation and for whatever reason you decide to plan a 3-day one.
No, if you're going into day two of a GP where you're playing in it.
No, yeah, if you're going into day two, I'm saying if this is on day two.
Yeah, if it's day two and you washed out day one, yeah, we can play Commander all night. I don't have to do anything but drive home tomorrow.
Your stubbornness sustains me. It's gonna, that's what.
Just for me personally, I will say that no matter where I go, I like to have themes within the decks that I'm bringing. And for me personally, it's usually just based on either the tiers, which I divide by color, or just some sort of colored theme. Like, usually when I go to the store, I'm either bringing all my Wedge decks, or all my Shard decks. Or recently, it was all Return of Ravnica decks, and now I'm going to go ahead and start bringing all Gatecrash decks. But at some point, once I've worked through some of the different decks, I like to do something where, okay, I'm going to bring all my decks that have red-white in them. So, I don't know. That's just something that I do personally. And I'd actually like to hear if either of you do something similar.
I tend to go through my decks and I go, okay, I don't need to take, like, if I'm going to, like, I'm going to the shop, or I'm going, even if I'm going on a trip, I go, okay, like, the shop I'm currently playing at a lot right now doesn't use general damage. So I have two decks that rely on general damage to win. Those get to stay home. You know, I go, all right, this Maelstrom Wanderer deck I put together wins automatically, and it takes a monkey in pants to play. I can leave that one at home for a while until I get bored. I've got 5 or 6 decks I'm down to. I'll grab these 4, kind of at random. I don't have necessarily a theme to all the decks I grab. I just try to grab a variety of decks that'll go with the experience I want to have.
Usually whenever I'm traveling outside of my regular play group, the first things I do is I have this box I like to call my long boys, because there's these little, like, card boxes that my shop sells that I can pick up, and they're big enough to hold about, like, a good, like, 5 decks in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually carry, like, one of those with me. And if I'm going to a shop that I've never played at, or I know that there's going to be games there, I grab one of these long boys and I put in a deck that I know that I've tuned to the point where I wouldn't want to change anything in it. Usually that ends up being either Belthor the Defiled or Ashen the Pilgrim.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2, I put in a combo deck of some sort. A deck that I could easily see myself playing or having fun with, just in case I happen to need to be the guy that plays combo. I always toss in one of my better aggressive decks. And then shortly after that, I have a Feldegriff deck that I play around with that I bring with me. Because Feldegriff, for me, has always been kind of fun when I'm playing with a group of people I don't know. Between Feldegriff, Belthor, my aggro deck, my combo deck, the 5th deck is usually whatever random deck I've been working on. Like right now, if I were to toss a 5th deck into one of them and head out like tonight, at this moment would be the red-black Rakdos deck that I slapped together over the weekend. Because I kind of want to see how it plays in like a different social setting. And granted, I can always play it with my group, but you know, if I'm going to be playing around with it, I want to get like results of how this deck works. So I want to get a good idea of how it like handles sometimes the best places to take it, or to places where people don't really know you.
Yep.
That way you don't end up getting people who's being like, you know, light on you or giving you favors just because they know that you're trying something different.
You know, always targeting the guy who guarantees you a 5-0 split with Factor Fiction. All right.
Kill that guy.
So, one last thing before we wrap up. It's just going to be a little bit of advice asking on my part, because the current plan is for game day next month in October, you know, the whole Fight the Hydra event. I'm actually going to Chicago to visit a friend, and we're going to go ahead, you know, use a couple of standard decks I slapped together, and we're just going to fight the Hydra and have a good time. And going to see if we can find a couple of people playing Commander at her local game store, too, while we're at it. You know, we've been talking a little bit back. I've just kind of been tossing ideas about which EH decks I can build, because, you know, she's got, like, the 2 or the 3 that she kind of slapped together, because she's still new to Commander in general. You know, she plays a lot of Modern, so she's not new to Magic. But for me, you know, we've kind of already established, okay, I'm definitely bringing Kalia, because that, you know, that's my trademark deck. That's my baby. You know, I'm bringing the Niv-Mizzet deck, because, you know, she's just a big Izzet fan, and that's what they want to show her. And I'm going to try and figure out what 3 other decks are probably worth bringing. So I've got a combo deck, and a deck that's built for a more competitive meta that does use land destruction as a meta, as a win con.
Let's see, how many decks will you be carrying with you, unless just to get that out the way? Is there, like, a limit on how many you want to carry?
I established a long time ago that I always carry 5 decks with me.
Okay, so you have Kalia.
Yes.
You have Niv.
Yep.
So it's already 2.
Yes.
And you said you have your combo deck, right?
Yeah, Niv is the combo deck, and Kalia is the really aggressive one.
Okay, so you have Kalia, you have Niv. Now, what were the other 3 options you have?
I'm thinking Karthus, which is a dragon tribe deck, just because she really loves dragons, so I think that's something that she would appreciate seeing. And Karthus is really just kind of a mid-range fun dragon stuff deck.
Okay.
So that would qualify.
So you're slapping Karthus in there because chicks love the Karthus, and that's what you're going with.
Yep. It's the other two decks that I'm trying to figure out what to bring.
And what are your other options? You already have a combo deck. You already have your signature deck. You already have your
fun
dragon
deck
that you're good. Your fun themey dragon deck you're going to be playing with. So this way, you know, you can impress the ladies with the dragons. Because, you know, women love your long serpents. And now between these three, you already have a combo, a signature, and a theme. So what aggressive deck are you going to be throwing in there?
I'm thinking about bringing Aurelia the Warleader.
All right, then. So there's one. Now, do you play control? Do you play mid-range?
I have some control decks. I think most of the decks just kind of fall into mid-rangers if I can't think of whatever else they would fall into. Because the
Is it something where with this weekend you're going to be gone? Do you actually want to play control? Like, I know there's sometimes where I go, you know, I know my games are going to be short. I need them to be kind of short and violent. Do you actually want to spend time being the control player?
Actually, no.
All right. So
the other question
that
I need
out.
To ask is, depending on the kind of weekend you're having, can you play one of these hammered?
I think
that would be the signature deck.
Actually, the only deck I can't imagine trying to play hammered is the Niv-Mizzet Draco Genius deck, because it's either that or the Shroom deck, because those are really the only hardcore combo decks I have.
All right, then Shroom it is. And there's your five.
All right, there we go. I'll play with
you. He doesn't want to play at Hammer?
Yeah, those are the two that he would say, I don't want to play drunk.
Those are the two that make me think the most.
I said, so it's not Shroom then. Whoops. Backtrack. If that's the case, kick Shroom out.
Bring whatever your flavor of the month that you're working with is. That'd be my suggestion, is take something that's going to be new and exciting for you, too.
All right, that works. Okay, I think we're just about done here. So, yeah, if you want more GP talk-ish, you can go ahead and hit Noel up in his articles. He runs the Social Contract every other week, and this is right up his alley.
Yeah, please come and talk in my articles. There definitely times when I feel like when I'm writing an article, I'm screaming into the ether, and I don't know if anyone's listening. I actually have some people come to me. I judged at Star City Games Salt Lake, and actually over the break, and got to meet some people who actually read my articles and liked my stuff. Yeah, by all means, leave comments in my articles, please, to crush my crushing lack of self-esteem.
Okay, next up, we're going to go ahead into our strategy segment, and we go ahead and help another friend around. So what happened on Twitter recently is my guy, Chris Briggs, tweeted me a deck list that he put out on tappedout.net. You know, it's a great place you can go to. You can look at all the statistics of your deck. You can look at the mana curve, the curve of mana cost as it plays out. Sorry. And it'll even look at the tcgplayer.com prices and average your deck out. The deck that we're looking at right now, sent to us by Chris, you know, right now it's averaging $419 on TCG Player with 12 cards missing from it. You know, and that's not taken into account, you know, are they foreign or foil or are they special promo versions? I'm not sure which version it's actually putting up, because, like, Jace Bellerin has a bunch of different versions. And I definitely don't know if he's playing with the Ages of Artifice version that's really expensive. Yeah, it doesn't give you the exact value, but at least gives you a ballpark estimate. It gives you an idea of how much your deck is worth, which I think is really cool. I spent my weekend uploading the Gatecrash decks that I've been working on. And it also leads up to a place where you can go ahead and comment and leave suggestions. Crispy came to us with a problem. The problem is that his deck, it's not as consistent as he wants it to be, and it's kind of not doing all that much for him. His idea is that he wants it to have not a combo win condition, but he just wants one of those decks that synergizes within itself really well, you know? And that's something I can certainly understand. That's actually a lot how I build. I look at cards and I think, okay, is this card going to be better in this deck, or is it going to be better in that deck? Am I using this card just because it's kind of a good card, or do I actually have ways to really get more bang for my buck for this card? Like, well, don't go ahead and talk about this real quick, because it happens to be in this list, Solemn Simulacrum. You know, Solemn Simulacrum, it's a great card that a lot of people say would go in almost any commander deck. But I actually don't put it in most of my decks, and I've only got like two or three that I use in a couple different decks, because they actually form a strong bond with the rest of the cards. You know, it ramps Eldrazi card, goes in almost any deck, but I prefer to put it in decks where I can get a lot of blink out of it, or I can get a lot of recursion out of it. You know, it's in Carador because I can sack the Solemn at will, get my cards, and I can reanimate it. I put in Shroom because I can reanimate it. I put one in heavy blink themes because I can blink it, flicker it, or just decks that really like having the strong bodies for the mana ramp. I'm really min-maxing with limited resources
versus a Havoc.
So we're going to go ahead and look at this deck. This is a Riku of Two Reflections deck, which, you know, if you don't know him by now, I have to wonder where you've been for a while, or you just might not see him that well. But I'm going to go ahead and read him off, just so we're all caught up. Riku is a legendary human wizard. He's a 2-2 for 5. 2 blue, red, and green. One of the original Commander Precon generals. Whenever you cast an instant sorcery, you can pay blue and a red. If you do, you can copy it, and you can choose new targets for the copy. Whenever another non-token creature enters the battlefield, you can pay Simic colors, green, blue, to make a token that's a copy of that creature and put on the battlefield. So in my experience, Riku has done a lot of stupid things, and this is actually pretty good because I have a Riku deck myself that I actually transitioned from a Mouse and Wanderer deck when I had to kind of say, okay, there are way too many Mouse and Wanderers running around. Let's go ahead and change things up just a bit. So guys, I'm looking at this list, and there are some really good cards that you kind of put into most decks like Riku. You know, you have Animar, Soul of Elmas to make your stuff cheaper and it's easier to copy. You have a lot of ETB effects like Avenger, Zendikar, Maul Drifter. But then there are other stuff that I'm not really sure why they're in here, because I'm not seeing a lot of cards that really go with them. I see Niv-Mizzet the Firemind. I'm seeing Vicious Shadows, which is an enchantment that triggers whenever a creature is put into a graveyard. So, kind of looking at this hodgepodge of cards, what are your initial impressions?
Would either one of you be willing to try to explain to me how does Riku work with Flipsecond?
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and explain this real quick, and then Noel can correct me, because I like to see if I can answer judge questions, but with me getting ready to test and all that. So, because Split Second stops everything from going on the stack after that, you actually don't get to copy anything with Riku when you use a Split Second card.
Riku is a triggered ability, you see the whenever at the beginning of it, so those abilities still trigger and have to resolve before Split Second will. It's the same reason why Counterbalance and Sensei's Divine, Counterbalance still works off Sensei's Divining Top.
Ah, okay,
or
I didn't...
Rounds and Grip.
Okay, I just didn't actually see that part in Split Second. Okay, so, yeah, that would make sense. If I'd known that, I would have gotten that easy.
So if I cast Crozen Grip and I have Riku out, I can copy it.
Yeah, you can copy it.
Okay, but it's one of the main things I'm thinking about with this particular deck, because, as I said, like, I don't really play around with copying spells and things that are copy intense on the average. And as I'm thinking about it, like, I didn't know how that would have worked with Split Second. But if it works, it works. So that's just something I figured we should, like, verify out the gate now anyway, though.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just for personal.
Alright, so.
Myself.
Yeah, so no, go
so
ahead and give
all
your.
All those split cards I was trying to question do deserve to be here.
Alright, so no, go ahead and give your impressions on this deck.
Sure, you're playing. It's kind of a good, stuffy build, but that's okay with Riku. Like, Riku's one that makes sense to play good creatures and good spells because you're going to copy them. There's a couple cards I question that I just go, why do you have this in here? Kezzeret the Seeker is the first one of those. You're playing a deck with 5 artifacts, and really none of them are ones you'd absolutely want to search for. I think you can do better in this deck. Rather than trying to tutor and sack your guys at Birthing Pod, like, I see the cute interaction you're going for with, I'm going to make a token copy and sack the token, but I think we can leave Birthing Pod and not have Tezzeret in there to search for it. I feel like we either need to add a lot more artifacts or cut Tezzeret, and I lean towards the second.
Yeah, and not only that, but he only has one artifact landing there, so it's, and not only that, it's Seal of Synod. If you're able to cast Tezzeret, you already have the double blue. The only reason I think you would be needing him in this particular deck is because you just want to be able to get those land drops, or get that land ramp, and get it with colors outside the ones that you actually already have with Tezzeret. The only reason you would be getting the Synod, which is the blue artifact land, is because you really want to play Teferi, Mage, and Zalfir.
Yeah, so personally, I would cut the artifact package out, as far as the Seed of the Synod and the Academy Ruins in your lands, and then all the artifacts you have are fine. In fact, all the artifacts you have are good in a Riku deck, but I don't think you need a way to tutor for them with Tezzeret, and you're not really ramping with them, so I would say Tezzeret and the Academy Ruins and the Seed of the Synod both take a walk.
Yeah, you can probably get, if you desperately need the tutor for most of these artifacts, I'm pretty sure they're actually blue spells, or just some other way to tutor them up that you can actually synergize better with Riku. I mean, this is what we're talking about with synergy.
Yeah. If you're real desperate, you can play Fabricate, but you don't need it in here.
Yeah, and because it's a spell, it's something that you're going to be able to synergize better with Riku in his copy abilities, as opposed to Tezzeret, who, yeah, he'll ramp you up with Sol Rein or let you get an extra use out of Mimic Vat, but he just doesn't work as well with these particular group of cards as something else would.
So those would be my first suggestions. The other thing is you have Peregrine Drake in here, and I know what you're doing with it. You're doing it, and you're going to copy it and hook it up to Jedi Navigator. I'm going to do you a favor and remove that temptation from in front of you and tell you to cut Peregrine Drake. Infinite Mana is not fun for anybody. You can say you're only going to do it once, but you have both of those cards and you have tutors. We know you're going to do that. So I'm going to help you step away from the dark side and tell you to cut Peregrine Drake right now.
Yeah. Now see, I actually wouldn't be opposed to that necessarily. necessarily, because, you know, if it's one of the ways you want to win the game, you can go ahead and win the game with it. But I don't see anything in this deck that just inherently says, I win with infinite mana, except for Clan Defiance. You know, with Clan Defiance, yeah, you can play Riku, and then you can copy it, and you can kill two people. But there just aren't any ways to win with mana. It's really more of a, this is going to be a huge mana ramp for me, I think.
Yeah, and admittedly, at some point, yeah, you'll get to cast it, tap, and have one turn of that, and that's cool, but you're also going down that path into making this into a combo deck, and I don't think you need to be. I think Riku's powerful enough, and he said himself he didn't want to be a combo deck and didn't want to do that. That's the one I'd recommend cutting, and if any of you say, but we'll add Palancron, then I will reach through this microphone and strangle you.
No.
Don't go down that road, William. Don't go down that road.
No, I already tried that role with Malice and Wanderer, and it was silly, but I ended up taking it out when I started switching over to Riku. Now, looking at the creature base, I'm seeing kind of some, not necessarily desirable things for what I think you're trying to go for here, because you're trying to play Birthing Pod in this deck, which, it's a great card, but your deck has to be built to really handle the Birthing Pod. And what I mean by that is, you want creatures that have, okay, they have their one use, and then you want to go ahead and level them up. And some of these creatures aren't guys that you do want to level up away from. Like, having Edric in there is good, because he's just a massive draw engine. You're going to be playing a bunch of creatures anyway, so it turns into more cards. That synergizes really well. But then you fill him up with a bunch of other guys that are people that you don't want to level up away from. Having Jinkataxius as a top ender, okay, I can kind of understand that. But Niv-Mizzet the Firemind, Droira, Teferi, and even Vesuvian Shapeshifter, these aren't guys that you necessarily want to pot away from, I have found in my experience. I mean, Tandem Lookout is a good draw engine, but he's not something that you want to pot away from. And in my experience, most decks that want to run Birthing Pod want to have a consistent stream of creatures that say, okay, if I pot them away, am I going to feel bad about that? I also know what you think about doing. You're going to be able to play Riku, you're going to make it token, and then you're just going to pot away the token and move up on the ladder from there. That's not always going to happen. And you're going to have to think about, okay, I don't have Riku available. Is this someone I'm willing to give up? And on that note, Droira doesn't play as well in here because you have big spells, but Droira is working with a bunch of cards that are actually kind of inexpensive. And the big ones that you do want to be dropping with Droira, you don't actually want to be dropping with Droira because then that gives everyone else four turns to get ready for your Tooth and Nail or just whatever huge spell you're trying to play.
I really think that Droira is a giant way to draw attention to yourself. Everyone's been beaten by that deck. Everybody knows what that deck looks like, and to me, putting Droira in here where you can't maximize from her abilities is a great way to draw undue hate to yourself. Droira's on one of my lists to cut.
Yes, you have, these are colors that draw a lot of cards. If you put blue and green together, they draw a lot of cards. That's something that happens in every deck I play with that plays blue and green together. The problem with that is that you often get a little too many cards, and you figure, okay, it's better to use Droira to go ahead and empty out my hand rather than just, you know, hard casting, not being able to cast them at all, and then losing them. I can get that, but
you say that, but there's not a lot of card drawing here right now.
Actually, I was going to mention that. Like, I see Urban Evolution and Fathom Mage. I see Jace Architect of Thought. And then
you got Recall.
Yeah, there actually isn't a lot of drawing here, and that's except Niv-Mizzet the Firemind, who draws a card a turn. Like, I would just assume it's replaced that with Draco Genius, because Draco Genius draws cards like a boss.
I feel like we can do better than both of those.
Yeah, Tandem Lookout and Edric, they certainly do draw cards. They're good for that. But yeah, I think a lot of what you're missing in terms of consistency, because you have tutors, but those only grab you the one card, and it really makes it kind of toolboxy. You're going to need gas for this, so we can probably replace some of these creatures with creatures that actually help you draw. You know, even something like Farhaven Elf, which tutors, is still kind of a draw because of placing itself.
Well, the one thing I kind of want to throw out there, like, before we get into, like, cards adding, is I've noticed that 6 of the creatures in his deck are legendary. And when you have a general who kind of wants to make token copies of the creatures you're casting, you really don't want legendary creatures in that particular aspect because, you know, that's just another card that you'll get a chance to play, but you won't get a chance to actually use. Mm-hmm. And while Animar is perfectly fine in this particular aspect, you know, because, you know, he does help you with the mana farm. Something along the lines of, like, Niv and Jinkataxis, while great when they do get the chance to do their thing, aren't really going to be something that you're going to want, like, a second copy of. So
I'm kind of on the fence about Jinkataxis, too, now that you've mentioned it. Like, the more I think about it, the more I think he's going to draw you such ire from the table, making everybody discard their hand.
Yep. I mean, I would be perfectly fine placing Jinkataxis with the Maelstrom Wanderer. Not only does the Maelstrom Wanderer known for getting you that crazy amount of value, but you also get that. Actually, no, that's pretty much it. You just get all the instant value with Jinkataxius. Once Maelstrom Wanderer has hit the table, especially since he's not your general anymore, he doesn't draw the hate as much because you've already gotten your stuff, which what's happened, happened. For Jin Kataxis, though, he has that constant effect where he's drawing you cards and making everyone just ditch their entire hand. He's going to get hated on faster than anything else.
Wanderer also has the magic words, creatures you control have haste.
And another thing I want to toss in there about the Millicent Wanderer is like, well, quick question. Another rules question. I have Rico, the twin, the two reflections out, and I cast the Millicent Wanderer, and then I do the copy effect. How many times do I get to cascade?
You still only cascade twice because the Millicent Wanderer is a cascade casting trigger, not a enter the battlefield trigger. Last thing I was mentioning before we go into actual specifics. I think the ramp pack for this deck is just fine. And he actually has a bit of land destruction in there and Stone Rain. And a couple of lands that actually do some work, so that's good there. I think part of the problem is that the removal isn't actually the best in this deck. He's got some counter spells, but some better removal would probably do well. There's the Rapid Hybridization just came out. That's a really easy card to grab a hold of. You know, just
Cyclonic Rift.
Cyclonic Rift, that's a really good...
Yeah.
That's a really good one. Just red burn spells in general, like replicate. What was the replicate burn spell that we were talking about yesterday?
Pyromantics.
Yeah,
or electric.
Yeah, Pyromantics. That would be a good one to grab because you can scale it. And
for this particular one with the Pyromantics, I wouldn't really suggest it if we're taking out the infinite mana combo because then it'd be no real. It basically would go by what you can afford.
Okay. Yeah. Go with stuff like
as opposed to like having something special.
Go with stuff like Annihilating Fire, stuff that would exile cards. You know, good burn will get rid of awful utility cards that you just can't get rid of otherwise.
Mm-hmm. This deck really wants an O-Stone. Like, I feel like it needs a Wrath, and Cyclo Rift may be better. Inundate's a personal favorite of mine. Bounce all non-blue creatures to their owner's hands. Especially with something like that, because Riku can rebuild so fast after a Wrath, I'd really like to see one more in this deck.
Yeah,
the main reason I would suggest Cyclonic Rift for this is because with Riku, you then have three options. You can either Cyclonic Rift and then just copy it and only hit two permanents, so you could, like, say, bounce, like, two problematic problems without having to have that whole seven mana to bounce everything. And if you do hit the seven mana, you can bounce everything, and then, you know, you don't have to spend the extra mana to make a copy of it because you just got rid of the board. Everything except for yours stuff.
Yeah. Blasphemous Act is a great budget option in terms of Wrath because it just kills everything that doesn't have protection from red or damage. And with as many small creatures as you might be pumping out with this deck, it'll help lower that cost substantially. And Rite of Application is already in this list, sir. Do we have any specifics?
I have a few cards that I think you should consider.
All right.
First of all, I would go ahead, and I know this is going to sound terrible after I took out a combo to put one in, but put Kiki Jiki Mirror Breaker in here. Not because it goes infinite with Zealous Conscripts, but because so many of your dudes have such good ETB triggers that having a second one is never a bad idea, and getting a second copy of it off of even something like an Acidic Slime or a Mull Drifter, getting a second trigger off of it can be really sweet. Also, same thing with Conjurer's Closet. It's currently in the budget bin at your local gaming store from Avacyn Restored, and it's from Flicker a Dude. I'd like to see us push the, we're going to go to Value Town with these ETB triggers, especially because we're going to get two of them with Riku already. Conjurer's Closet gives us another chance at all these sweet triggers.
Oh, yeah. I definitely recommend Conjurer's Closet because that's a super easy card to grab hold of. I would save Kiki-Jiki for if you actually have the money to spend on that, because the basic form of Kiki-Jiki still goes for at least $20.
Is it?
Yeah, he gets played in Splinter Twins, man.
That's well, I know he gets played in Modern, but...
Yeah, Modern drives the prices. I mean, he was more expensive before Modern Masters came out, but he's still kind of a dollar card.
Yeah, he's not a cheap card, but you've got some other not-cheap cards in here already, so I don't feel bad suggesting Kiki-Jiki.
This is true.
One card I personally, but if are we, we're questioning, real quick, are we actually dropping in the Blasphemous Act?
I would think so.
Blasphemous Act is actually going into this deck, then my personal suggestion would be to throw in a copy of Stuffy Doll. And for anyone out there who doesn't know Stuffy at all, it's an artifact creature. And when it comes in, you get to choose a player. And then Stuffy Doll, whenever Stuffy Doll takes damage, it deals that much damage to that player.
Because
we're playing with Riku, and if you're going to drop Stuffy Doll, you can always, you know, use Riku's ability to make an extra copy of Stuffy Doll. So you can have, like, you know, a nice little kind of like a pillow fortress, because people won't want to attack you as long as you've got Stuffy Doll and extra copies of them lying around.
Yeah, and I get that, but the problem is, whenever I'm building a deck, I never like having just one card justifying the reason another one's in there. It's like the whole Tiki Jiki Zell's conscripts thing for me personally. If I have a lot of ETB effects that I have in my deck that I want to abuse, then yeah, I'll put Kiki Jiki in there. If I'm putting it in there just because I run Zealous Conscripts 2 or Emancipation Angel or Spells or Stutter Sprite or whatever, then no, I don't think it's worth it because you're relying on these two cards to do this specific thing. Even if it's something as powerful as it just wins the game, that's never been really big for me when trying to create a deck that flows as a whole.
Go ahead, Calvin.
Well, my main reasoning for Stuffy Doll is because I personally have always found him to be like one of the greatest blockers that I could ever possibly drop down on a table. Mm-hmm. Just because of the fact that when he's there, any damage that he takes automatically goes to an opponent. But he also helps really well with getting around certain things like opponents who I can't personally like hit. So people can attack me, and I can block the Stuffy Doll, and it will do damage to you. Like, say, for instance, like, you know, we wanted to, like, you know, it's like a nice little, like, piece to have into just about any deck that I've actually had. It's more like of a... How should I put this? It's more of like a personal favorite card that I've always kind of enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And in a particular deck like this where, like, I personally don't really see... I can see, like, the copy effects here and the clone effects here, and Riku is going to be able to make copies, and the more copies of Stuffy Doll I have, the less likely it is for people to attack me, because they would end up, you know, pretty much killing themselves as I block with Stuffy Dolls.
Mm-hmm. I actually agree with Calvin. I like Stuffy Doll mostly. It does come with your general, but also it's such a cool political card. Like, when you get into kind of the middle of Act 2 with most Commander games where one person is that guy, and that guy's either going to win or get knocked back of not being that guy anymore, playing Stuffy Doll and naming that guy puts that guy in check. I actually really like Stuffy Doll on this list.
I'm still not that big, particularly since, as far as I know, outside of Dead Eye Navigator, there's no real eye to reset the Stuffy Doll. I mean, you can definitely make more clones, and that's fine.
At a certain point, it turns into it kind of turns into a middle finger to a certain player. But at the same point, I think the value outweighs the risk here.
I'm still going to disagree because again, it doesn't really synergize with Birthing Pod because you don't really want to send it away. I mean, I guess you could if that player's already knocked out. But I'm just one of those players I'm thinking, okay, how much of the deck does this card interact with? The card is good on its own. I won't deny that. But if you're looking to try and make every card count towards the overall synergy, I definitely think you have a lot better options than Stuffy Doll. Okay, so I think that we're actually about out of time for this. So any last tips you want to go ahead and give our friend Chris Briggs about this deck?
No, it looks like fun. Enjoy yourself. This seems like it's going to be fun. It seems like it can be very powerful. Resist the temptation, my friend, to go tooth and nail for Zealous Conscripts and Kiki Jiki or something like that. But rock on with excellence, sir. This looks like fun.
The only thing that I personally would like to toss out there for him is that since you do have this on tappedout.net, use tappedout.net to kind of play around with your lands and your mana base a little bit, because from what I can tell, your converted mana cost for your cards and your land and the amount of mana you can produce is slightly off. I keep, like, whenever I look at this thing, I always end up having the servos kind of off. I just know, like, me personally, whenever I do try to play around with tappedout, I try to get those lines together. But that's just me.
Okay, so we're done here. This has been Deck Tech Hospital. If people like getting help, if you like getting some suggestions, or you like having some people tell you why you're playing your deck wrong, go ahead, put your deck on tappedout.net. I have a link to this week's deck in the show notes. We'll go ahead, we'll look at it, we'll analyze it. You know, definitely tell us what your goal is and how you want to win, because that's really going to affect how we look at the deck. You know, with this deck, the guy just said, you know, I want a deck that really synergizes well, and that's the approach I took from it. If it had been something like, I want a hardcore combo deck, I would have been like, Tooth and Nail, Kiki Jiki, Pestermite all day. Done. Now, with that being the case, we're all done here. We need to hurry up and go into our Silesnia set review.
Okay, everybody, it's time for us now to go into the Return to Ravnica review. And this week we're going to be doing the green-white, which is the third part of our review. We've already done monocolored. We've already done, is it yesterday? And now we're doing green-white. Yes. And I'm trying to do what I can to make sure I do this as quickly as possible because I really don't want to fall off again.
Right.
Please, Lord Jesus, no.
Yeah, like Calvin said, this is our Silesnia set review. We've got Noel here joining us today. So, Noel, tell me, why did you want to review Silesnia?
I like Silesnia because Populate is one of my favorite recently released mechanics. I have a token deck. It's not one that's kind of in my roster of normal decks that I bring out. It's one of my best decks as far as just pure power-wise goes. But I love the fact that I have spells I think people should already be casting with an added effect of Populate. There's a Fog in Populate. There's a Make My Dudes Indestructible in Populate. There's Give Me a Flyer in Populate. There's a lot of things that I already want to be doing with added on value. So that to me is the reason why I really like that. I'm not some tree-loving hippie, but I was also willing to review this one. So I really actually like this one.
All right, and like last time, we're going to go ahead and kick off the review by talking about the Guildmaster, Justani Selesnia's voice. Double green, double white. She's a legendary They are legendary creatures. They are dryads. There are three women attached to one trunk. It's beautiful. Whenever she is a 2/5, whenever another creature ends a battlefield under your control, you gain life equal to that creature's toughness. Pay one green, white, tap, you populate. That's it. Justani just populates your dudes all day, every day, and you get a life buff off of it. I'm going to go ahead and ask your guys' opinions before I give my opinion of her, because I've actually been playing this deck for a while now.
Well, as far as Justani goes, like, personally, I would call this, it. I'm not really sure if it counts as a she.
I would say they.
Or they.
Oh, God, another gender conversation about this? Great.
No, the gender's not even in question.
It's just more of the, like, do they count as multiple people or just one living thing? It's less gender. It's more of what are they together.
It's both.
You know what? I just said they, so I'm just going to go with that.
As far as
I'm concerned, they are just fine. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you can gain life equal to the creature's toughness, which is great because with these particular characters or this particular commander, you're going to be doing a lot of populating. So every time you drop a token or a token comes into the battlefield or you get a chance to make another token, you get a chance to actually gain some extra life. And it's more like life gain on it is more just of a secondary option. You're not really using her for the life gain, but you are gaining life because you're kind of making a field full of dudes.
Yeah. Yeah, I really dig this card. My only beef with it is that it kind of occupies the same place in Commanderland as Rhys the Redeemed, in that if you're going to build a green-white token commander deck, you've probably already got your general in Rhys, and I think Rhys is more easy to build around. But I like that she copies any token. I like that she, the incidental life gain, which is one of my favorite things, like Sphinx's Revelation, for example, is another example of life gain being tacked onto another thing to make it incredibly relevant. I'm a big fan of that. I actually dig her as far as a her, they, whatever, as a commander choice, probably in a Rhys deck rather than commanding her own stuff, but just fine if you feel like switching it up or playing dual commander, which is a variant format that's super fun.
I've actually been playing Justani as the general since she came out, and it's been, she is deceptively strong. You know, you're thinking populate once a turn, I get to populate one soldier a turn, and it's not that exciting. It's when you get to the bigger tokens that this girl really, really shines. I've actually been modifying the Silesnia deck, that token deck that I've been playing, to include more of the angel token producers. You know, every other set, it seems like Wizards comes out with something that makes more 4/4 angels, and that was something I really thought was cool, so I just started jamming in all the angel token cards I get. When Justani starts populating the really big tokens, they add up really fast, and the life gain is nothing to sneeze at all. I am not kidding when I say that Justani has been the singular force that has won me games just because she's either brought me back from oblivion, or she's given me such a huge life cushion that no one else could just touch me unless they were trying to win with general damage. And moreover, because that populate doesn't target, they don't necessarily know which one you're going to populate. If you have an angel token and a worm token, you know, the 5/5 trampler, you can either go for the bigger body with some evasion, or you can go with 4/4 flyer, that is total evasion. The ability to do this at instant speed, which means that you really don't have to wait for that token to attack, because you're probably doing it on the end of your opponent's turn. You're probably finally getting all sorts of crazy ETB token-y trigger effects too, like Cathar's Crusade. That deck card was already ridiculous in token, but now you're getting something that will also trigger so that you can get the additional life that the Cathar's Crusade was giving that token. So, going on, Null, why don't you go ahead and give us a Selesnya card you'd like to talk about?
Growing Ranks is one of the cards I see almost with every set. It's the, at the beginning of your upkeep, do the mechanic of the set. And this is the one at the beginning of your upkeep, populate. It's real similar to, any other kind of populate ability you're seeing, where if you've got a good token, getting more of them is sweet. If you've got some of the triggers on creature things, a lot of times it's, that. This card has been surprisingly actually underwhelming for me, though, because it's one of those cards that feels like you're winning more. You feel like, if you're already making a token every turn from Trostani, from, Reese making bunches of them, you don't need this, and if you're behind, it does nothing. If you've just been board wiped or something like that, you're out of luck. So, for me, Growing Ranks has been kind of underperforming. Other people may have had other experiences with it, but that's kind of my take on it.
I personally haven't actually used it. I have a Reese to Redeem deck, and usually in my Reese to Redeem deck, I've already got enough stuff that can be used to make token copies. You know, between Reese and between the Bidagazi Guildmage, there's no real need for me to actually need that. But if it were something that I was expecting, like, I could easily see having this, and if I had another enchantment or something to put in tokens at the beginning of my upkeep, you could stack the triggers, correct, and populate afterwards. Yeah, so, because I could see that being one of the things where, like, Eldrazi Spawn?
Yeah.
They had, like, what was it, like, there's an enchantment that tosses out 0/1 Eldrazi Spawn token.
Awakening Zone?
Yeah, there we go. So I could easily see, like, having this and Awakening Zone, and basically you kind of have two copies of Awakening Zone until you can get your field back. And hey, you know, at least then it's turning out mana creatures for you.
I will say that with Growing Ranks, it's more like one of those set it and almost forget it kind of things. You know, you still have to remember your trigger. But in the games that I've been playing, I've actually been pretty happy to have Growing Ranks, because there are going to be games where I didn't have the mana to really do something and populate with Trisani like I wanted. So being able to have that card that automatically populates for you is actually quite the saving grace. Because you're playing green, you should be ramping. But at the same time, you're playing these bigger spells that make a lot more tokens, and you need that way to consistently populate. Especially if you have stuff like Eldrazi Monument that require a sacrifice at the beginning of the upkeep too. You know, you can populate and you just sacrifice that new creature to the Eldrazi Monument and it works fine. I think populate in general is just one of those mechanics that works better with the quality of the creatures that you're using. You know, populating soldiers and birds, those are great in limited games, but when you're talking about the bigger EDH picture and you're doing it only once a turn, you need to be populating rhinos and worms and angels. So, Calvin, go ahead and bring up the next card you want to talk about.
So, the Vitigaithi Guildmage is green and a white 2/2, and it has the first ability of 4 and green white, and you get to make a 3/3 Censor token, and it has pay 2 green white populate, correct? And I believe it's a Dryad Shaman. The main reason I'm going to bring the Guild Mage up is because every time we do this, we're going to end up bringing up the Guild Mage anyway. The good thing about this particular one, though, is that, say, for instance, you have this, it can technically kind of turn into a win condition in and of itself as long as you've got the mana. It churns out 3/3 tokens for 6 at first, but if you don't play anything else, you can always pay 4 mana and just get a 3/3 Centaur token, just because you got a chance to activate the first one. And from that point forward, and since the Guild Mages don't tap, as long as you can dump enough mana into it, you can continuously churn out 3/3 Centaur tokens. And then when you finally reach a token that's bigger, or say for instance, like, you know, if you had something along the lines of like a worm, or your, damn it, what's that damn metal 6/6 worm that's a titan?
Yeah, the worm.
Yeah, there we go, worm curl engine. Yeah, so like, you know, and like, you know, the centaur tokens work for you perfectly fine.
Populate life linker.
A worm core engine dies on you. You can populate her, you get a life linker, or populate and get a death toucher, and you know it just gets better from there and straight on up.
All right, Noel, your opinion?
Did I already give my opinion on this one?
No. We were talking about Trisani.
We're on the Guild Mage, that's right. I'm actually a huge fan, too. I like mana dumps, and being able to just go, I have a bunch of mana left over here, and into something valuable is good. Even if it's just the creature token, sometimes just having a random 3/3 is good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She is one of the all-stars, you know, in limited and in Commander, just because, you know, like we said, mana dumps are good, and the more powerful the mana dump, the more powerful this card is actually going to be late game. So, this, making the centaurs and being able to populate them herself, that's already good enough. But like I said, I've been playing the deck with a lot bigger tokens, so I'm usually populating angels and rhinos and worms. So, she actually gets a lot more powerful, again, with the increased production of the tokens. So, the next card I'm going to go ahead and bring up is, which I'm pretty sure that's the one I wanted to talk about. Is that the one I want to talk about? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the one I want to talk about. It's Dryad Militant. Dryad Militant. Dryad Militant is a Dryad soldier. She's a 2-1. You can pay a hybridized green-white for her. If an instant or sorcery card would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. So this is a developmental card made to really kind of fight flashback and all those Snapcaster-related things. In Commander, it's really good because what do Commander players like to do? They love to get value out of their things, and if you're playing blue, you probably have ways to kind of reuse and regurgitate those spells over and over again. So Dry Militant...
Melek is a paragon. Hates this chick.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the Snapcaster playing decks really hate this. The Dranu Lich Lord absolutely loathes her. She's just a great hoser card in Juron, I found, especially if you're playing a deck that doesn't rely that heavily on instants and sorceries.
Yeah, this card really wishes it was Rest in Peace. I feel like that instead of this effect is never going to be there when I actually want it, because it's attached to a pretty fragile body that dies in a stiff wind.
Oh, that was something we forgot to talk about in the review, is Rest in Peace, but oh well. Okay, so no, go ahead and bring us a second card. There's still Sundering Growth if you want to talk about that.
I want to talk about Sundering Growth because I can say Rootborn Defenses enough times that he can't stop me.
There we go. Go.
Sundering Growth is another one of these value-added cards that this one is just a naturalized, it's 2 green or white, and destroy target artifact or enchantment, populate. And it's one of those things that I'm a big fan of playing more answers in every color, and especially something like this where odds are if you're in a Selesnya color set, these are not a hard mana color to make. They're both hybridized, so it's okay. And so they give you that. This is one of them that really actually excited me with it, because I'm going to cast a card I already want. I already want a disenchant or a naturalize in my deck, and I'm going to get added value onto it.
Yeah, there's nothing really wrong with this particular card. And seeing as how it's 2 hybrids of green and white, when you're in this color combination, chances are every land you play will be producing mana of that color. So it's not like it's a drawback. Unless, of course, you're going into like a 3-color deck, then naturalize might be more, you know, easier for you to play around and use. But naturalize doesn't give you a body, so.
Even if you're in a 3-color deck, like I could put this into Gave or into Corridor without batting an eye at it, because it's hybrid. I'm not even having to cast double green or double white.
Yeah, it's very easy. You can easily just toss down double green, double white, green and or white. You know, just make it easier for yourself. And it's possible to cast it that, like, it's one of those things where it looks like it might be harder to cast, but it's really not. And, you know, it gives you bun afterwards.
Okay. I will say that populate, you know, like you said, it's added value to stuff that you should be playing already. And it's actually got me to try and force certain things into the deck just because they populate. And because I'm, again, I'm playing the bigger creatures that I want to populate, I actually want to include as many populate mechanics as possible. You know, I'm playing stuff like Dresani's Judgment, you know, a 6-cost instant that exiles a creature, which normally would be really lackluster and underappreciated, you know, when you have stuff like Swords and Path to Plowshares. But because of that extra added value of the populate, you're kind of swinging 2-for-1 in the other direction. You know, I can go ahead and get rid of your dude and give myself a surprise blocker.
Now, before we go too much further, Will just made a brand new card called Path to Plowshares.
Ah, yeah. Double white, exile 2 creatures, they get a land and gain life.
Oh, that card's miserably bad.
Okay, I'll have to see if I can fix that. Okay, so the card I want to talk about is Wayfaring Temple. It's an elemental that costs 1 green and a white. Wayfaring Temple's power and toughness are each equal to the number of creatures you control. So it has that Maru ability. Whenever Wayfaring Temple deals combat damage to a player, populate. Again, try and find more populate cards, and this card is pretty decent in token decks that want to build huge armies. This guy is actually pretty dependent on board position, I find. If you don't have a lot of rogue passage effects or just a lot of unblockability, you need to rely on someone being open for it. And if he's too small, you know, you don't have... Because, again, if you're playing, like, a lot of the smaller tokens, token decks, then you have the ability to just pump out dudes that make him huge and undesirable to block, but then you're populating a small guy. If you have, you know, just like two or three of the bigger angels or worms, then he's not that big and he's not going to survive swinging into most things. With that said, this guy still carries equipment really well, and I love giving him something like a Moon Silver Spear, because he'll get the spear, you swing, he gets an angel token automatically with the attack, and if he connects, he populates that angel, so you've already gotten two angels off of one Moon Silver Spear trigger.
I wish this card had Trample. Really, really wish this card had Trample.
Oh,
way better. Like, I can't stand playing it, because I'm sure I'm making dudes if I ever get to hit, but I never get to hit because everybody has their 2-1 to throw in the way of it. No one's ever going to just let this one through.
Yeah, and every time I personally look at him, the only thing I kind of wish is, like, I don't wish he has Trample. I wish he had the ability where, like, he came in and made a token. At least if he, like, came down and made, like, a 1-1 flyer, and he would kind of be like a 2-2 for 3 and give you a 1-1 flyer. If he connected, at least you'd have something to populate. But if he's, like, the only guy you have, or all you have are actual, like, creatures, like, nothing that's tokens, he's pretty much just going to be, like, a big dude, but he's never going to get that populate activation if he does get through.
So there are three cards worth bringing up left, I think, because the Luxon Unsmiter doesn't really matter that much in Commander.
I was saying, do you want me to do all the bad cards for Selesnya? I can do those really, really fast.
No, we're only going to... I don't want to risk losing the connection again, so we're just going to go ahead... The last three are going to be Selesnya Charm, Collective Blessing, and there was a... and Armada Worm.
Heroes Reunion? Heroes Reunion?
That's perfectly fine with me, because I was actually going to go with Selesnya Charm anyway.
All right. Pretty sure I was going to say Collective Blessing.
All right, then you guys do that, and I'll get the Penis Worm.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, Lee, since we've gone through this, the next card on this list that we're going to be tossing around is going to be the Selesnya Charm, the green-white instant, and it has three options for you to pick one. One, target creature gets +2/+2 and gains trample into end of turn, or exile target creature with power 5 or greater, or put a 2/2 white knight... No, with vigilance onto the battlefield. Now, one of the good things about this card, this is another one of those charms that I think could fit pretty much into any deck. One, it gives you a token, so you always kind of have instant speed 2/2 guys, so if you need to populate, you can always have something to populate. The opponent can wrap the board all they want, and then after wrap is gone, you can instant speed in a 2/2 guy and just continue on with your populating thing. The other good thing I actually enjoyed about the charm is that since it does exile target creature with power 5 or greater, if an opponent happens to be playing like a commander that happens to be a little bit bigger, or someone happens to drop down some form of a titan or one of those primordials that you don't like, you can cast this, and instead of sending it to the graveyard, it's exiled and removed.
Yep.
And also, because of the ability to give trample, you can always kind of pump a guy and get the extra little bit of damage in that your opponent might not have been expecting. That's my 2 cents on it. I personally think it's a really great card. It's only 2 mana. Why aren't you playing this if you're not playing it? If you are playing it, you don't need me to tell you to play it. Will, no? Any other particular comments about this charm?
I dig Surprise Trample. I really, really like Exile, creature that's relevant in Commander. And the other ability's kind of meh, but you can't have 3 winners.
Yeah, I think...
Well, on the bright side. Yeah. With the populate mechanic, it does kind of at least give you something to throw down there.
Yeah, I mean, a 2-2 Knight is what it is in Commander, but...
2-2 Knight Vigilance, sir.
Yes, 2-2 Vigilance. It's not really that much, you know, you can topple them over pretty easily in Commander, but it is what it is. The charms have been really good so far. So I'll go ahead
so
and...
So what you do is you put the charm under the scepter, end the turn, you flash in a 2-2 knight, and then when the knight swings and they try to block it, then you tap the scepter and give the knight +2/+2 and trample, turn him into a 4/4 trample for 4 mana.
Tournament winning play, there you go. Okay, so 2 more cards before we wrap up here. I'm gonna go with Armada Worm. 2, double green, double white, creature worm, 5/5 trampler. When Armada Worm enters the battlefield, put a 5/5 green worm creature token with trample onto the battlefield. This is kind of what I was talking about with those bigger quality creatures. A 5/5 worm with trample is really hard to just chump block. Late game, they're probably going to have like a titan or something out, so you're going to need to play some sort of pump effect to really push him through. But if you're playing green-white tokens, then you already have a bunch of Anthem effect already in play. Not only that, but there's a bunch of ways to also abuse the end of the battlefield effects. You know, we just talked about Conjurer's Closet earlier. I put Mimic Vat into my deck, so I'm going to have the ability to put an Armada Worm token into the into play that makes another worm token, and then I can use Justine to populate the Armada Worm copy token to get another Armada Worm that comes with another token.
Yeah, this is as about as small a token as I want to get too. Like, I don't mind angels with 4/4s with flying because they have evasion, but as far as ground pounders go, we want these big tokens. We want, you know, the Wayfaring Temple tokens. We want the 5/5 worms. We want stuff this big for Commander.
All right, Calvin, any other thoughts?
Actually, now that you mention it, like, as far as our Modern Rome is concerned, like, there's no real arguments there. I've actually personally just kind of expected it to show up a lot more, but I don't really see it nearly as often as I thought I would.
That's interesting.
But it's just, you know, but then again, like, you know, it's one of those things. I'm just assuming maybe it's just one of those things that I don't really see that way.
Okay. But
I feel like there's a lot of cards that outclass it. Right. Like, yes, 10 Trampley powers a lot, but when you look at kind of the scope of EDH creatures in green and white, there's a lot more that do more splashy things that cost more mana, but we don't care about that. We're playing Commander.
Yeah, right. Something with the Armada Worm, it kind of has to have the deck that goes with it. You know, stuff that wants to use ETB effects or the populate deck, which my deck is kind of both, because it does a lot of the flickering for the guys who make dudes.
But so, before we go too much further, like, we were talking about Wayfaring Temple before. Just want to toss the idea down there that kind of came back across my mind. Could a Wayfaring Temple underneath a Mimic Bat, then it can populate itself when it connects.
Yes, and then those stay on the field. And then you have the new, what was that guy that came at, Spawnwraith? It was in the Commander product.
Yeah, Spawnwraith, or there's Giant Ataphase that has that when it comes into play, copy, or when it hits, copy creature.
Yep. Okay, so, no, you wanted to talk Collective Blessing.
I got one left, and that's Collective Blessing. White, green, green, and 3, it's an enchantment. Creatures you control get +3/+3. It's kind of simple in what it does, but what it does is incredibly powerful. I'm actually not a big fan of a lot of anthems in EDH. Like, a lot of people will go, I'm going to build a token deck, I'm going to put Gaia's Anthem and Glorious Anthem and all these other cards in it to get these little pumps, and to me, they've never done enough. This +3/+3, though, is just about big enough to where everything matters. All of a sudden, the 1/1 elves I'm creating with Reese are 4/4s. The 3/4 Eldrazi spawn tokens coming off of Awakening Zone, this turns every creature you have dropping, which you're probably dropping a bunch of fear in tokens, becomes a credible threat.
Yes, absolutely. And it turns those even bigger, those big threats into even bigger threats. You know, suddenly their Armada Worm is dropping 16 power of trample.
Ugh. So you're saying that a Worm Coil Engine drops down as a 9/9, and then if it dies, it gives you 2 6/6 worms.
Yep.
One has life link, and one has death touch. Ugh. So, like, Jesus, how do I go from a 9/9 to taking 12?
Okay, now, guys, you think we're done, but we're not. We have one card left. We have one card left, and it's actually something that a lot of my opponents forget that I have on the field, too, until I actually use it, and that's Grove of the Guardian, the pre-release promo for Return to Ravnica. You know, it's a land, so it can tap for a mana, but it taps for a colorless mana. But if you pay 3, green, white, tap, and tap 2 additional creatures that are untapped, then you sacrifice Grove of the Guardian, you get an 8/8 green-white elemental creature token with vigilance, and then you get to populate it with all your populate shenanigans. And speaking from experience, this is actually not that hard of a card to activate. You know, I have people who see it, and they just kind of dismiss it for whatever reason. You know, it's not really something that they target with land destruction. Like, they're not really aiming to wasteland it, because they could just kill it later, and then I'm down to land anyways. But if you're playing a bunch of smaller tokens already, you can use them to pay the cost. If you're playing with smaller utility dudes that just kind of sit back, they don't attack or block, do you think you can use this too? I am not afraid to use Justine to go ahead and use this anyway and not be able to have that populate right away, because the token is just huge. And if you start making multiples of them, even 2 or 3 are going to end the game really fast.
Yeah, I like this card. The cost is kind of steep, but in tokens not so much, because you're sacrificing two dorky little dudes to it.
You're not even sacrificing the dudes, you're just tapping the dudes.
Oh, it's just tapping the dudes. It's sack the land, which, big deal.
Yeah, it's like these guys are praying to raise up the altar that is the unholy holiness of the elemental token.
Like, you over there, get me six mana. You two over there, get down on your knees and worship me. And I want that land over there exploding. And then as soon as the land blows up and the dust clears and the smoke settles, you see this gigantic 8/8 piece of, like, temple just walking up.
My new head
to stomp your opponents into the dirt.
My mind walks like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Calvin, when someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes! Now, of course, my headcanon is that the Grove of the Guardian Elemental thing is actually the Jaeger, and the two creatures you tap are what's going to pilot it. Of course, I haven't seen Pacific Rim yet, so I don't know the exact specifics, but that's the general idea that I get.
Like, these two creatures are going to jump into this beast.
They're just going to start punching dragons. Dragons and titans. Okay, so now we are officially...
You said Jaeger, and I went to a completely different place.
Okay. Okay, we're officially done with the Selesnya review, so we're going to go ahead.
Talking about boobs.
That's what I thought.
Okay, we're done with this. I'm going to end this before my connection drops out again. We're heading straight to the outro.
Right, the Commander Cast drinking game.
I'm sad that we're not talking about Heroes Reunion. I want to talk about Heroes Reunion.
If you want to talk about Heroes Reunion, you can do it on your own damn podcast.
No, I'm going to.
What are you going to put under the ISO scepter and get 7 life returns?
Next episode of Rivals Duel that we record, I'm going to make sure to bring up Heroes Reunion at least twice, just to prove that I can.
Yes, you can, because it's your own damn podcast. Okay.
Darn right. With blackjack and hookers.
Okay. This has been Commander Cast, Season 11, Episode 3. Guys, I want to thank you for coming out today. Calvin, thank you for bringing the thunder. Calvin?
Can we please keep that on to the awkward silence of you going, Calvin?
Hello?
Calvin, thank you for bringing thunder and not disconnecting while I'm trying to talk to you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Say goodbye to the folks.
Goodbye, everybody. I'm going to sit here and scratch myself now, and hopefully my computer won't die on me again.
Noel, thank you for joining us tonight for our double recording this week.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, so go ahead and hand out some contact information. We're going to start with Noel. If people want to reach you, how can they do that?
Sure. You can always hit me up on my email, Noel Clausen, NoelCLausson, @gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter at MTGNoel. And also check me out every Thursday on CommanderCast.com with either a written article in Social Contract from Below or my new podcast with Eric, Rivals Duel.
Okay. And Calvin, if people want to reach us, how can they do that?
Okay, everybody, if you're out there and you're listening to this show and you want to try to do what you can to reach out and contact us, you can always go over to Twitter, and you can go to @CommanderCast, or you can go over to Facebook, where we have the CommanderCast Facebook group. Or if you really want to hit us with an email, you can go to CommanderCast@gmail.com. You can also go to CommanderCast.com and go underneath the show, and there's comment section there. You can comment on it, and we'll look at those comments and cry, because you'll probably be telling us how much we suck. And we'll, probably just, shrug. And then record another episode, just in spite. If you're trying to contact me personally, you can always go over to Twitter. I'm @CaptainRedZone. Or you can hit me with an email, CaptainRedZone@gmail.com. You can also find me on Facebook. I'm starting to try to do what I can to be a little bit more sociable and talking to you people in the Facebook group. But, I share stuff and things, and no one cares. And I get it. Because I barely care about what I post on Facebook anyway. I only go there for the pictures of boobs.
All right. I think that about wraps us up here. We'll see you next week.
Boobs.
Thank you, Calvin. Yeah. Next week, join us again next week. We're going to bring you back some more community strategy and technology. And as always, let's get it!